I think the sort of protein thing at the minute is like a big market employ as well, because when you go into the supermarkets and you actually compare the labels of, say, a bag of cheese versus a high protein bag of cheese, there's like 1 or 2 grams of difference. It's interesting now golf has taken a bit of a shift where a lot of the guys and girls as well are wanting to put on a bit of muscle mass to help them hit the ball further or to just strengthen up. Basically, creatine's one of the most researched and popular supplements out there. It's sort of exploded in golf a little bit at the minute, I think, all more so with Rory making that comment.
Welcome to Golf Yourself Healthy, the podcast which invites guests from all corners of the golf, health and well-being industry to share inspiring stories and practical insights on how we can be at our best mentally, physically and socially, both on and off the golf course. I'm Chris Lynch, your host and the founder of GYH, where it is our mission to help you live happier, healthier and more fulfilled lives through the power of golf. If that sounds like a movement and a community that you would like to be a part of, then head to golfyourselfhealthy.com and subscribe now. Today's guest, Amy O'Donnell, is someone we'd all do well to listen to and learn from as it relates to golf and health. Firstly, as a supremely talented golfer who has played competitively throughout her formative years and adult life, she knows how to navigate pressure and stay focused on her goals. Indeed, as a one handicapper who has ambitions to get to scratch, I found it especially interesting to hear her outlook on how she manages to continue to enjoy and have fun in golf while still striving for excellence. As a playing member at Royal Portrush Golf Club, the hosting venue for this year's Open, Amy recounts many fond memories of playing the links with her father, someone she considers a role model and inspiration for her own golfing prowess. She also shares some fascinating stories about having caddied at Portrush for some of the most influential content creators currently out there in golf, such as the Brian Bros and Eric Anders Lang, whilst also caddying for none other than Butch Harmon, a legend of the game and someone who has coached some of the biggest names in the sport, such as Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. The primary purpose, though, for Amy's guest appearance on the GYH podcast was to gather her insights and advice on nutrition in golf. The primary purpose, however, for Amy's guest appearance on the GYH podcast was to gather her insights and advice on nutrition in golf. As a lead nutritionist across several professional golf tours, including the DP World Tour and the Ladies European Tour, amongst others, Amy is a trusted figure when it comes to helping golfers enjoy high performance through the power of healthy diet and optimal nutrition strategies. If any of you listening have, like me, struggled to know what to eat or how often to eat during an 18-hole round of golf, then this episode is frankly a must-listen. Similarly, if you find yourself confused or blinded by all the marketing shtick out there around things like protein, electrolytes, or creatine, then again, you need to listen to this episode because Amy cuts through all of that and delivers the facts expressed in a way which is easy for us all to understand and backed up by reliable science and research. Without any further ado, let's tee off and jump into the conversation. Amy O'Donnell, welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast. We find ourselves here today at Woodhall Spa, a venue which I have never been to before today, but a venue you have been here at several times from what you tell me. Let's start off, why are you here today?
I'm England Golf's national nutritionist for the men's, women's, girls and boys teams. I've been working here now for 4 years, so we get to come up to the camps sort of maybe pre-Christmas time and just work on the guys and girls nutrition when they're all together as a squad to try and help them out a little bit.
Nice. What's the kind of agenda like these, you know, give the listener and the viewer a sense of what has been happening today or what happens over the few days that you're here?
I'm with the men and boys camp this weekend. So there's a range of different coaches, putting, skill, swing coach, psychology, S&C, myself as nutritionist. Don't think I've forgotten anyone. But there's a lot going on. So we normally do coaching rotations, normally of about an hour per player. And we just spend that time with them going over what area they may need to improve on in the specific sort of disciplines. And it's just to get them geared up for the tournaments coming up in the coming season, or for anything they need to work on over the sort of winter sort of period.
Nice. Cool. I think we'll deep dive on all the nutrition stuff throughout the course of this conversation, because I mean, fundamentally, we've brought you on as an expert in nutrition to talk about that in particular. But to begin with, and as is customary on this podcast, we talk a bit about our guests' game of golf, why they love golf, their relationship with golf and things. And we start off these days with what I call the wellness wedge, which shouldn't be taken literally because Amy's got a driver in her hands there. But the idea here is to get you to pick a club out of the bag that sends you good vibes. It gives you good vibes. It makes you feel good more often than not if the club behaves itself. So you've got my driver there only driver. Because you're here on business and you haven't brought your own golf clubs with you today. But why have you picked the driver as your wellness wedge?
I love the driver because I can hit the ball quite a long way. Sometimes not in the direction that I want it to be. But when I do hit my driver well, it really sort of just makes me feel good. And when you see that just flying off into the distance, you're like, oh, that's not too bad. But when I get it going consistently, it's a club that I do rely on to maybe help me out, like pick up a few birdies here and there. Things like that, but then equally, sometimes it can be a little bit temperamental.
Have you, just out of interest, like, are you self-taught? Are you coached in golf, or how have you developed your game of golf?
So I've played now for about 20, 22 years. So started playing when I was around six. Always played with my dad growing up. And so dad would have taught me, and his dad as well. So they're big golfers. And then I would have learned at my little home club back in Northern Ireland called Whitehead, where the pro there would have taught me a lot of the things I know. And yeah, just sort of all my life really been a little bit more self-taught, or just played with dad a lot more, or went to a few sort of Ulster development sessions when I was a bit younger. But yeah, more so learned from my dad.
Nice. Nice. Well, we'll get straight to talking about where you play your golf, because you're in a rather fortunate position, I suppose. The envy of a lot of people watching or listening to this, in so much as that you're a member of Royal Portrush Golf Club.
Yep.
Which I'm sure is not only a wonderful place to play golf, but I mean, when the Open was there this year, is it what's the hole in the back nine? I want to say it's like the 15th or the 16th, where the camera pans out from the green and there's like an amazing, I mean, some of the views there just look incredible. Yeah. And a nice place to play your golf. But I was going to ask you what is your first memory of playing golf?
God, that's going back a while. I think it'll be, as I've mentioned already about my dad, probably playing the Generation Gap, which is a competition back in the little local hometown club, Whitehead, that I would think I was about 10 years of age, and it was always a foursomes competition. So I think that would be the first one, just like a father-daughter event, which was really good fun. And I can't remember how well we played that day, if we played well or not, but that would be one of the first memories.
Well, you were 10 years old then. You said, I've got a 10-month-old daughter at home, and I'm just waiting for the moment, Amy, when I bring her out onto a golf course. Well, I say that. I actually had her out at the chipping green with me at my local golf club the other day. She obviously didn't have a golf club in her hand. She was just observing me chunk a few chips and do my best. But what did your dad do to make sure, like, you enjoyed your golf? Or was it kind of like, how did he teach you? Was it always like sort of with a view to being competitive, or a view to enjoying, or a bit of both?
Yeah, I think dad never pushed me too hard. It was always my decision if I wanted to go and play in any tournaments or just go out and practice with him. And it was great. When I was growing up, I would have gone up to Whitehead, and there was a few other girls that would have played, and we would have gone out together all the time. And then when I joined Portrush at 10, I would have gone down. They run a great sort of junior program every summer, so you get to go out with loads of different juniors when I was growing up as well. So you got over the fear of playing with other boys quite quickly as well, because obviously there's a lot less girls sort of playing golf. But at Portrush, we're very lucky. They have a great sort of junior section, boys and girls. But yeah, it was just about going down, being sociable. And if you do sort of make a few friends quite quickly playing golf, I think that is key to keeping you in the sport and keeping you interested.
Nice. A question I have for you that's a follow-on to this, Amy, is because the clue's kind of in the title, Engulf Yourself Healthy, in so much that we believe that golf is good for your health and well-being. And in actual fact, the conference you and I met at or connected at for the first time in Edinburgh earlier in the year was at least partly centered around that, right? But for you personally, like, what does golf mean to you? What do you get out of playing golf?
I think it still keeps me competitive. Still managing to play off a handicap of one sometimes a little bit less than others, but. And I think it's just built a good bit of confidence in me over the years as well, just knowing that I can play to a pretty decent level, as I said, sometimes. But as well, just keeping me very sort of resilient and want to keep coming back and trying to play and improve my game. So I think that's definitely helped me, not only in sort of sport, but also throughout my career and like getting through university and things like that as well. So it's helped me in a lot of aspects of life for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you say play well sometimes. I mean, I'm pretty sure at one handicap. I mean, you play well a lot of the time, I'm sure. But how long did it take you to get to that level?
So this is the lowest I've ever been now, sitting at 0.9, so 28 years of age. So it's taken me, what, since I started playing when I was about six? So about 22 years, but I've held on to that sort of handicap range between 1 and 3 for the last sort of 5-6 years.
Yeah.
So it's just about trying to keep it consistent. And I am very fortunate, as I said. I am a member of Portrush, so I live right beside the golf course now. But I'm also a member at Whitehead, like I've mentioned.
Yeah.
And then when I was in university at Liverpool, I've joined Royal Liverpool as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm also a member there. So got to play when I was at university as well. So okay. I've always kept that golfing passion.
I'm interested in this because, you know, for me personally, and I'm sure for a lot of people that watch and listen to this podcast, you know, I'm 39 now. I'd say I properly got into golf, I don't know, about 9 or 10 years ago. You know, grew up and born and bred in Scotland, home golf and everything, but it wasn't really until I actually moved to London that I discovered it. And I was, you know, I've always, as is the case in golf generally, I suppose handicap is sort of seen as that. It's a metric. It's a yardstick that we can all use to sort of measure our playing ability. And I've always wanted to get it down. I mean, now WHS of like 20.7, which, if I'm perfectly honest, I don't think is a fair reflection of, because I don't play much competition golf at the moment. I'm not putting cards in that would actually bring it down to where it probably is, which I would say is realistically maybe around like a 12 to 14 or something. So I'm not a bandit. So before anyone, I haven't put the cards in because I've not had the time. Something I'm working on at the moment is I find competition golf quite stressful. I get in my own head too much. I want it too badly, meaning that I physically tense up. What has been your key to sort of performing at your best in a competitive setting?
I think I now notice, now I'm a little bit older than when I first started playing. Obviously, as a kid, you kind of have no fear. But now I sort of know when I'm going well or when I'm not, or if I'm a couple under or just a couple over. But I think just trying to remain calm and keep consistent, or have that one consistent swing thought before you hit the ball, is a really good sort of attitude to try and just try and play as if you were playing a normal day. Or I always say to myself, Amy, you've parred these holes 18 times before, so why can't you do it again in one round, kind of thing?
Mm.
But then there are other times where it is just, you just get a bad day some days, but you try and limit the mistakes as much as you possibly can.
Yeah. And what is that one consistent swing thought in your case?
Keep the head down.
Really?
Yeah. I have an awful habit of bringing it up. So just like keep your head down, feel a bit awkward with your head, and then you know you've kept it down consistently.
Fair enough. Do you want to firstly just tell us about headline level, you know, what you do, maybe a little bit about how you got into it, why you got into it.
No problem.
And then we can dive a bit deeper into kind of what do people really need to know, what's useful for them to know in terms of general information about nutrition, what they can bring into the game. But yeah, tell us a bit about what you do and how you got into it.
So obviously very keen golfer, always knew that I wanted to work in golf, never wanted an office job. So went and did my degree in sports science at Liverpool John Moores University, and then knew I wanted to specialise in sort of the nutrition route. So I did my master's in sport nutrition at Liverpool John Moores again. And I was fortunate enough to get my placement tutor was Professor Graham Close, who works in all various different sports, rugby, golf. He's done a lot. And basically I just asked him for a placement in 2020, and it was obviously when COVID was hitting, so wasn't too sure what was going to happen. But he sent me an email one day in December asking if I'd want to support the European Solheim Cup team in Ohio the following September. So I obviously jumped at the opportunity, as I'd never been to the States either, and then did a little bit of work with the LET as part of my placement as well, during my master's. And then, yeah, ever since then, I now work with the LET, the Hotel Planner Tour, cover a few of the DP World Tour events, obviously work for England Golf, do a little bit with Golf Ireland as well, and then the R&A competitions as well, like the amateur, the women's amateur, Curtis Cup and Walker Cup as well. So busy enough.
Yeah. When we talk about nutrition generally, okay, like what are the healthy habits to be in as they relate to nutrition? Because again, I think about how we live in times now where protein's marketed everywhere in the form of some things that, you know, your consumption of protein might be a healthy way of doing it. But equally, sometimes I kind of go, well, A, I don't actually really understand protein and why I should be eating it. And I also am unsure, I'm just using protein as an example, right? Mm-hmm. But if I'm going into a supermarket and every cereal bar has a protein version of it, like just help the listener, the viewer understand, like, what are some of the sort of key things we should all know about nutrition generally? Never mind golf for a second.
I think the sort of protein thing at the minute is like a big market employ as well, because when you go into the supermarkets and you actually compare the labels of, say, a bag of cheese versus a high protein bag of cheese, there's like 1 or 2 grams of difference. So I think it's also like a big money maker, as people just think protein is the be all and end all.
Yeah.
But just really it's keeping nutrition simple and just doing the basics well. Like, when you have a day of heavier activity, or you're maybe at the gym playing golf or whatever you may be into, and work or school, you increase your carbohydrate intake that day, keeping the protein intake consistent across each meal as well. So trying to have around 30, 40 grams of protein in your plate. So that's, for example, like a chicken breast, and then making sure you have, fill your plate as colorful as possible with different veg, having some fruit, trying to hit those sort of key 5 fruit and veg per day kind of thing to increase your vitamins and mineral intake. And then just trying to keep the hydration as well consistent throughout the day too, as obviously dehydration can have some negative effects as well.
Such as?
So it just can lead to sort of fatigue, poor decision making, cramping, injury, just sort of the standard dehydration effects that you hear.
Yeah, fair enough. Maybe sort of talk us through how, you know, for example, live example, you're here at the moment, you're working with the men's and the boys teams in England Golf. Like, so what does a typical conversation look like with them around nutrition?
It's interesting now golf has taken a bit of a shift where a lot of the guys and girls as well are wanting to put on a bit of muscle mass to help them hit the ball further or to just strengthen up. So that ties in really well then with obviously the S&C stuff, the strength and conditioning work that our strength and conditioning coach Dan does. And a lot of people don't think half the time that you need to actually have that food to build the muscle that they're wanting to sort of gain. So it's all about obviously putting the correct fuel and the correct amount into your bodies to make sure we are trying to build that muscle mass and build that strength. So that may look like a higher protein diet. So having around 2 grams of protein per your kilogram of body mass, those types of things. So like if you weigh 75 kg, you have 150 grams of protein daily, but then also complementing it with the right sort of carbohydrates and fats to make sure we are getting the correct energy intake in. And then another sort of common theme is players feel like they are fatiguing towards the end of a round more so, especially if it's an early morning tea time, because a lot of players don't feel like they can get up early enough to either have breakfast or they're not eating enough in the golf course. So we try and encourage them, if they don't feel like eating that early in the morning, having a really decent smoothie with all your sources in it, and then trying to eat maybe every 3 to 4 holes whilst you're out in the golf course of a decent mixture of your slower releasing carbohydrates, proteins and fats as well, to help give us that muscle growth and repair, and then that low intensity energy source from the fats as well.
Okay. I'll ask you something, kind of looking at this through a personal lens here, right? So I, at the moment, I'm definitely, I haven't put myself on the scales recently, partly because a friend of mine who's a personal trainer, once he said to me recently, he was like, don't bother weighing yourself because it's a number, and it basically, you know, it's, people can obsess about just weight, so it's not telling you a full picture necessarily. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I would say that part of the reason why I don't go on the scales at the moment is because I don't want to see the number that's on there.
Yeah.
But I think where I'm going with this is I'm not in the physical shape at the moment that I want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And where this manifested kind of negatively 2 days ago was, I was telling you before we hit record, I played at a Mizuno Golf Pairs event with a good friend of mine on Wednesday. And for what it's worth, actually going back to what I was saying about stressing out or finding it difficult in a competitive environment, what I enjoyed about that was playing with a friend in a pairs event kind of took some of the yeah. strain off me, and it kind of made me relax a wee bit more. But the thing was, like, that morning I just was a bit disorganized. I didn't actually have clothing ready, you know, stuff that I feel comfortable in at the moment, because yeah. my body shape and stuff like that. And so the day got off to a bad start, because I'm like, I feel like crap about myself. And these are the sorts of things that when I carry that mental load, let's say, yeah. out onto the golf course, it is fundamentally going to affect my performance. It's going to affect my enjoyment of mm-hmm. the round, and just how I feel about myself, like my mental health and things like that as well. So I guess, I mean, probably the main question I want to ask you here is almost like, if at the moment, because I often look at this and go, I know, for example, that if I were to say, like, you know, talking about the strength and conditioning side, if I work on this or that, then I'm going to get physically stronger, I'll probably hit the ball longer, etc. But I often think, before I even start with that, I want to lose weight, because I know that there's for me, in personal experience, there's a direct correlation with, like, if I'm a bit thinner and leaner, it will just make me feel better. So, like, what's the general things to do if you want to lose weight but still maintain a healthy diet?
I think, as I've already sort of alluded to, keeping that protein intake high, as protein doesn't break down as quickly as our carbohydrates and fats. So that's why we stay fuller for longer. And it obviously helps build our muscle mass and help us recover well as well. So if you are doing that little bit extra in the gym, or you are playing a lot of golf, that can really help you feel a lot better and help you recover well too. With regards to, like, scales and stuff, I always say to people, there's so much more than just that number in the scale.
So you agree, like, with that sort of perspective?
Yeah, like, especially females, of course, they've different hormones traveling about their body every month, so weight fluctuations are really quite common. Obviously, just a typical scale is not going to show you your sort of body or your lean body mass and your fat mass. So you're actually not getting the proper picture of what's going on inside your body. I think it can be a good sort of marker for you, but I would only ever hop on them the odd time, to be quite honest, to see where I'm sitting at, kind of thing. To me, jumping on the scales isn't a real thing that I would do personally. And I know it can have, like, a detrimental effect to people when they do see that maybe the number there hasn't moved or it's gone up. But I do think people often forget that when you are building muscle mass, it obviously weighs something as well.
Okay.
So if they don't see that number move, it's to not be disheartened, because if you are training and you're eating as well as possible, your diet's really high in protein, you're fueling for the work required, you're probably building muscle. And that's maybe why the number's staying the same, but people do often forget that.
Yeah, so then if, like, maybe where is weighing yourself, in what circumstances is that beneficial? Like, what does that data point actually tell you, if you know?
I think it gives you a good guideline. If you do have that sort of healthy relationship with food and scales, I think it can be a great sort of base measure for people to look at, say, every 2 to 4 weeks or things like that. It's when you sort of start noticing people maybe jumping on the scale sort of every day, or them really becoming obsessed with that one number. That's when I would sort of say to try and back away from that and go off how you feel in every day. If you're feeling really energetic, you're not feeling fatigued, you feel well recovered, go by your gym performance. If you're starting to hit PBs in the gym, or you're squatting a bit heavier this week, then you know you're fueling yourself accordingly. And then that obviously translates to the golf course as well. If you start to notice you're hitting the ball a bit further, or you're scoring a little bit better, you know you're doing everything right as well.
Okay. So then, just to recap then, if I'm going forward, or any of my viewers or listeners are to take away anything and go, right, if I'm to measure myself in terms of, like, all these different numbers, you talked about lean body mass, weight, I know there's, like, body mass index. Like, in your view, what are the most helpful numbers to keep track of to give us a sense of our health, let's say?
It's an interesting question, because I, as I said, I'm not a big one to follow, like, numbers myself.
Yeah.
But obviously scales are the most accessible object to people. If they are wanting to keep a track of their weight, you can get like scans called DEXA scans and things like that, which are quite expensive, to be fair, to get your lean body mass and fat mass recorded. You can get skin folds done as well, which gives you a good idea of your fat mass, gives you an indication of that. But as I say, if sort of scales are a good little benchmark, if you are, say, working with a nutritionist or a coach, anything like that, like to check in each month to see if the weight is dropping, that's when it can be really beneficial as well, too. Yeah.
But if I hear anything, it's like go by feels, actually. Yeah.
Well, that's the way I do it, whereas a lot of people do, as I say, the number and the scale can help them out if they are just sort of checking it every 4 weeks kind of thing. And it just is sort of a little check-in point for them.
No, that's good. I can get on board with that, and I'm sure others can too. I think it's with any of these things, it's kind of like you've got to... You can't expect overnight results with things like these.
Yeah.
But actually, if over a sustained period of time, you can track how you're performing, and whether it's in golf or it's on your exercise bike or running or whatever kind of thing, then it's you'll see some gains, which... at least in my experience, always make you feel good when you're kind of, you can always see a positive trajectory or progress. Right. So broadly speaking, good nutrition choices throughout a round of golf. Let's start with that. So for any of us, like an everyday golfer, what are good, healthy snacks that we could have in the bag that we can reach for that are going to help kind of sustain us throughout 18 holes, for example?
The good old classic bananas, they're hard to beat. It's good to have them in your bag. Energy balls too, they're quite popular now, and they'd be a favourite when I come here to England Golf. Or...
What's good about it, because again, I worry, I'm glad you raised them, because I look at them and I'm like, is that another one of these marketing ploys where it's like protein balls? And
a lot of companies or different people are sort of making the protein balls now, but I've always found the favourite when I'm working at like the team events or here at England Golf, that the homemade ones are always the best, the ones you make yourself, or they always seem to be the most popular. So they're just basically a really good mix of slower releasing carbs, but then you also have your quick releasing carbs and a little tiny
bit
of protein.
Give us a recipe. How do I make them at home?
So it's just all it is oats, honey, peanut butter. So there's your low intensity fats as well, and a little bit of protein. If you wanted an additional bit of protein, you can throw some protein powder in there, but it's not essential, to be honest.
Yeah.
And you can use cocoa powder, give them a little bit of a chocolatey flavour, chia seeds as well, some milk, and you can sort of see then it all sort of starts to come together.
And what, so mix it all and then just...
Yeah, add a little bit of dried fruit, you can coat them. So there's very different variations of them.
Do you need to oven bake them or something after that?
No, you just
literally roll them up and then that's...
You can roll them in the likes of coconut or, as I've already said, like chia seeds as well. So there's so many different variations. You can make, and you can make 20, 30 of them in one batch, and you can store them in the fridge for a solid week, or you can freeze them as well and take them out in your bag. So it's just a good little energy ball.
So would it be fair to say though that, like, again, speaking from personal experience, like if I'm leaving myself short on time going to the golf course and haven't had time to make my own ones, I can be somewhat confident though that if I'm picking up a bag of them in the pro shop or something, they're still a better choice, the protein balls, than a Mars bar or a Snickers or something like that?
It just depends. Usually, yes, there would be, like, they'd have some form of sort of oats in them or something like that. But again, some of them are like marketed as energy balls or things like that, and they're sort of just, a lot of them are full of sugar as well. So I would definitely go for, if you do see them in pro shops or whatever, just go for the ones that have as little ingredients in them as possible.
Okay.
And then you know that they're doing what it says on the tin as such.
So I feel like I've interrupted your flow a couple of times. So we've talked about bananas, protein balls, anything we've missed?
Dried fruit, mixed nuts, those types of things, great to graze on. Some other players, they like to take out sandwiches or wraps in their bag. I was even talking about it with the guys this morning. There's been guys and girls out there with boxes of pasta, just constantly out there in the course. So chicken salad, pastas, those types of things. So it's a very individual preference, but yeah, just the more whole foods that you can consistently graze on or have your own routine out there, as I say, to get those good sort of carbohydrate, protein and fat sources in. It's really good for your own sort of routine and keeping those energy levels topped up.
Is there not a clip that came out not all that long ago where Rory McIlroy's talking to Scheffler or someone about creatine?
Yeah.
Well, I can't remember what that was about, but talk to about creatine.
Oh, I was there at that match, that Vegas match, watching.
You were there at that?
Yeah, but I was just as a spectator. Yeah, it's basically creatine's one of the most researched and popular supplements out there. It's sort of exploded in golf a little bit at the minute. I think all more so with Rory making that comment. It's a really useful supplement, sort of 3 to 5 grams daily, especially if you are in the gym training an awful lot or doing that strength and explosive work, because it is shown to basically enhance that in the gym, because what it's doing is upregulating your energy stores in your body, which obviously gives you the opportunity then to train for a little bit longer and a bit harder. And obviously, if you're going to train longer and harder in the gym, that'll hopefully then translate across to the golf course as well. And there's emerging research with it as well that it is sort of helping for overall recovery. And then it was even been shown that it's potentially going to help with the likes of Alzheimer's symptoms and things like that. So it's a really interesting time for creatine at the minute, but definitely a useful supplement for your golf or just overall health.
And electrolytes, I hear, getting spoken about a fair bit recently.
Yeah,
what are they and what do they do? What are they good for?
So they're useful because they're sort of mainly made out of sodium, which is obviously what we lose when we're sweating. We lose sodium through our sweat losses. And obviously in warmer countries where our elite amateurs and pros are playing a lot of the time, they're sort of following the sun. Sometimes just water isn't enough.
Right.
So that's when we would maybe say have 1 to 2 electrolytes out there in the course.
Is that like a powder? Is it something you would, could you add it to water then?
Yeah, so you can get it in tablet form, powder form, whatever it may be. And they're just really handy to have with you. Or maybe there's a day where you haven't maybe been drinking as much. It's just a nice little way to get some extra sort of electrolytes in there to help keep you hydrated.
Cool. Are there any misguided or kind of like things that you hear out there in the nutrition circles that you can almost point, you know, say to people, no, don't listen, that's bad advice?
I think the low carb diet is one that's always in the media or trending on TikTok or Instagram, whatever it may be, that it's the answer to help you lose weight. But basically what the low carb diet is doing is you're not retaining as much water. So that's why you might notice a lot of weight loss quite quickly. But obviously our carbohydrates are a main source of energy. So you're probably going to feel crap after not eating carbs for, say, a week or two. And yes, you may notice the scales dropping or whatever it may be, but you've just lost water weight kind of thing. And then once you do start eating your carbohydrates again, you'll just put it back on, and then people get a little bit disheartened. But it's just a big sort of belief in eating in moderation, or as I said earlier, like fueling for the work required, eating more carbs in days of higher activity, because we obviously do need that main source of energy. And then maybe days we're not doing as much, just eating a little bit less carbohydrate and more sort of lower calorie alternatives like our vegetables or fruit or things like that. So I think that people, as I say, do try and follow this diet of low carbohydrate, but it's definitely not sustainable or healthy, really, I don't think.
Fair enough. Weight loss drugs or medication, so like Ozempic and Mounjaro, I think they're called, are they? I see that, and I see how people are very drawn to it potentially because of the very quick results that you're getting, but I question whether that's actually healthy. Is there any...
I think it's an interesting topic for sure. I think it's underwhelming with the research that's out there at the minute. I don't think there's an awful lot because they haven't... I think it has been around for a while, obviously helping people with diabetes, people who probably need it for their overall health kind of thing. But I don't think it's been utilized enough in sort of the weight loss sort of industry for us to know actually what the long-term effects are. I personally think it's not going to give you as much benefits as if you were to sort of eat well and exercise a little bit more, and you're not going to sort of feel the benefits, especially internally, from doing and following that structure. But I think today we do live in a more fast-paced society where people do want results like yesterday. So I think that's why it's really appealing to people. Or I do understand like people who do struggle with their weight or maybe have all their lives, it can be to them like an answer that they've been waiting for. But then again, we don't know what the long-term effects are of the weight loss injections. And we'll probably start to see it in a few months, maybe a few years time, of what the sort of long-term effects are. But yeah, I don't know if it is a good thing or not, to be honest.
I think I'm going to skip back for a minute to talk about Royal Port Rush, because you made me aware, and I think, you know, I'm sure some viewers and listeners love to hear about some of the personalities, let's say, that you've... So you don't just play there, you caddy there from time to time. So who have you caddied for?
So recently I got to caddy for the Bryan Bros alongside my dad as well, which was a pretty cool experience. And one of our other really good caddies, Gaz, as well. So he's been caddying there for years too. So that was brilliant because we had a great time with those guys. It was in their major cut series. So that was really fun. And then I also caddied for Eric Anders Lang this year as well when he was trying to break 90 round Royal Port Rush.
He are does. These all on YouTube and stuff, by the way? Both Eric and the Brian Bros one.
Yeah.
So we can link that in the show notes.
Yeah, that was a weird experience at Portrush at the Open. Some random people coming up to me saying, are you the girl from YouTube? I had no idea what was going on. Yeah.
Hopefully that'll happen again now that
YouTube sensation.
Absolutely, Amy.
But 2 years ago, caddied for Butch Harmon as well, around Portrush, which was a really cool and special experience as well. So just getting to listen to him for 18 holes was quite surreal.
They're all quite different characters, let's face it, from coming at golf from different places. Yep. But like, what, you know, is there any one story or thing from those experiences that you really took away or learned something from? I mean, Butch Harmon especially, like, he's kind of viewed almost like as a bit of a godfather of, like, you know, he's coached Tiger Woods and loads of, you know, so what was it like being in conversation with him?
I think it was just, he was actually really helpful towards my golf as well and sort of gave me a few tips and tricks. But I think what struck me the most is just how down to earth he is as well. And as you mentioned, he's worked with the likes of Tiger. I think he's worked a little bit now more recently with the likes of Rory McIlroy as well.
Mm-hmm.
So just to spend that time with such the godfather of golf nearly, as you said, was just so cool. And just to listen to his stories all day long and hear how he's coached these guys in sort of different ways and things like that was really sort of surreal for myself, because obviously I've grown up watching these players, and to actually be out with the guy behind a lot of their success was a really cool experience.
Okay, nice. What has been your approach to dealing with, you know, adversity or building resilience, would you say?
I think that's a game where golf's helped me an awful lot. Is it's definitely made me more resilient over the years, because I've always found if I shoot a bad score, it does obviously get you down for a little while, maybe some people more than others. Or I know when I was a bit younger, it really, really frustrated me or felt awful about it. But I always sort of thought I have to come back and try and improve this and work on this certain aspect of my game, or try and get that little bit of distance or a bit more strength to try and improve my golf, which I think has definitely made me overall more resilient in life in general, to be quite honest, not just the golf as well.
Mm. Are you a goal setter at all in a golf context, for instance, or generally?
Yeah, I would definitely golf. My goal is to get down to scratch, partly because my dad never got that far. He got the 0.7, so I'd love to get down there. And as I say, this year, it's sort of been the first time in a long time I've seen my game sort of be a lot more consistent than it has been over the last few years. Even with work and stuff, I always strive to do the best. We're still doing sort of research in the golf and the nutrition area. And I think that's really cool, because there's not an awful lot of research out there at the minute, especially with regards to nutrition. So just to be at the forefront of that, it is like my goal to keep driving that forward and keep looking into it and see what sort of more interesting aspects we can find out about nutrition and golf and how we can support not only ourselves, but other players out there of all levels.
Yeah. If in your case, for example, you know you want to get to scratch.
Yep.
That's an outcome goal.
Mm.
But to get to that outcome goal, you've got to have process goals in place. Like, for example, that could be work on my putting, or that could be gaining yards or whatever. So have you thought about that at all? Like, have you got a plan in place almost for like to get you from one to zero kind of thing?
I sort of just go with the flow a little bit, just with the nature of my work and stuff. But I always try and find a balance where work obviously does come first. And then especially when I'm not traveling with work and I'm home, I will go down to the club. And I'm not the biggest practicer on the planet, but I love to get out and play 9, 13 or 18 holes, whatever it is. And I love going to the driving range as well. Hitting wedges is something I definitely need to work on. So I think that is definitely a goal of mine over the next sort of few months, that sort of dialing in anything from 100 yards, because I have noticed that's been a big area I've faltered on a wee bit. So hoping that if I get that sorted, my long game can keep carrying over and I can work on the shorter aspect.
I ask because I've never been anywhere close to where you are, but when you get to one, to get to zero, like, is it not like 0.1 increments when you get to one? Like, so for example, when you're a high handicapper, maybe it's changed in the world handicap system now, but in the old system anyway, like if you played off 26 and you got 39 points in a Stableford or whatever kind of thing, it would shave two or three shots off pretty quickly. But when you get that good, then so like, have you got a sense of kind of what you need to shoot or what you need to do to, like, would a 4-under get you to, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's that new world handicap system. So it depends on what scores you have dropping off at your cutoff line, like the little green line that you have on it. And then it's obviously your eight best score differences, the average of that. So some days, if you could go out and shoot a really good score, but if you've equally a good score dropping off, say your 21st score, then that can make all the difference in how much you go up. And then equally, if you shoot a really good score and you're replacing a really bad score, that can mean you could go down quite a bit. Like the other week, I went from 1.3 to 0.9 just by shooting one or two over, because it's all dependent on the course rating and the slope rating and what I had dropping off. So you can work it out. I prefer not to, just to not know if I'm under pressure that day trying to retain a good score or not.
How do you block that out of interest? I'm always mentally tracking how well or actually how not well I'm doing in a round. Any tips on that?
That's something I'm going to mention my dad again. He's probably the most positive man on the planet when it comes to golf and everything else. So I'm trying to take a leaf out of his book a bit more this year, more so than others, because I know I'm never going to get to professional level or whatever. And I must say, it's probably the first year I've really, really enjoyed my golf. Just like there are days, I say, it's heartbreaking and I have sort of given away a few tournaments here or there. But at the end of the day, I'm just out there to enjoy it. So I keep reminding myself of that and just that I am fortunate enough to play where I play consistently. And that's sort of the main thing for me now, is just enjoy it. And hopefully the golf will follow and the good golf will keep coming.
Yeah, well, I think that's a wonderful intention statement to always have. Is it, I think your example there proves that someone of your playing ability still can extract enjoyment from the game. As you've probably been able to tell, I had so many questions to learn from you around nutrition. And is there anything we've not talked about that you wanted to talk about, or like in you sort of leave the viewer or listener with a particular thought?
Keeping the basics and doing them well, finding a routine that works for you as a player, and what might work for you might not work for someone else. And just as I say, finding that good sort of nutrition routine and balance with any activity that you're doing as well will really help you out and keep you well sort of grounded when it comes to nutrition.
Lovely stuff. Well, Amy, thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for watching and listening. I'll let you get back to, do you have to walk down the corridor, like a short hop to wherever it is you're going next?
Down to the academy, yeah.
All right, brilliant. What's next in your day then? What you got left?
Just more consultations with the guys, yeah.
Cool.
So making smoothies.
Yeah, yep. Literally, that's what you're going
to
be doing.
Going down to make smoothies as well with them too. Bring it to life a bit.
Amazing.
Fabulous.
Could you make me one for the journey home, like to sort of a, that's cheeky to ask, but...